Welcome to Beat It Movie Reviews. I'm intense film grain Joe Cabello, and this is pro wrestling T-Rex Chris Asoda. What is up, Chris?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's going very well in this fine January Arink versus Aliens month. Okay, I'm going to be honest. I forgot to come up with a theme name for the episode. So I chose January Marink and versus Aliens. And you'll see why that's really clever. And why is that really clever, Chris? I'm going to force you to agree.
They're part of movies we watched this week. But I'm going to spoil something for you. I didn't get to see Skinamarink.
You didn't? Oh, never mind. No. We're not. So,
but you will be talking about it, right?
I'll talk about it.
But
it's not the theme of the episode. So you kind of fucked that over. And usually we hold these conversations off air, and it's screaming matches for hours before the episode starts. So you can't tell though, because we're professional. But yeah, okay, we're not doing that. So it's actually Chris and Joe versus Aliens month.
Okay.
That's what it is. And that's just as good as what I said earlier. And what did people just hear besides nonsense for the last 20 seconds or 30 seconds?
They heard Queenie Pie by Davis IL.
They sure did. That's our theme song, and it's from our great friend. So go check it out. You can find it. My dogs are going crazy. If you can hear my dogs out there, I think they're upset about this skin and marink pun. Is it even a pun? But you might hear them out there.
They're also huge fans of Davis IL.
They might have heard it through my headphones. But yeah, we're going to be reviewing. If you got anything out of what we just said and talked about, we're going to be reviewing Kids versus Aliens, a new movie on The Mail Must Have Just Come. This guy's still screaming. A new movie on video on demand right now about Kids versus Aliens. You can go rent that wherever movies are rented. We'll get into whether we recommend you do. But that's our feature review. And you know what, Chris, usually, and this is going to be something you're upset about. I know the fans, the audience is going to be upset about it, but we're not going to start with Chris Pick this week.
God.
Because it's instead the last of We Watch Along.
Oh.
It is our The Last of Us Watch Along that we do every week now. Until it gets canceled by corporate, the last of We Watch Along of The Last of Us. So the second episode aired this week on HBO Max, based off the popular video game. We talked about the pilot last week. So Chris, what did you think of this episode and the trajectory it's going on?
I think I enjoyed it. I thought it was, I don't know, solid. It's hard because, it was very much kind of what I expected from it at this point.
Playing the game and everything.
Playing the game and everything. It is very, very similar. You know, there are ways that it detracts, but it still has this like parallel to what happened in the game, but they just kind of make it slightly different. The one thing that's the biggest difference, I know that I think I talked about last week, but the virus was like airborne, so it was like spores. Right. So when it would infect like a building with the spores, you'd have to wear a mask. And I think that it's hard because not having that really feels like it kind of takes away from what's unique about The Last of Us as like this zombie.
Because we don't get zombies that are airborne viruses. You know, airborne zombies, they can fly now.
Yeah.
Our favorite quote. I rep you into it. Yeah, but yeah, it's always bitten or fluids of some kind.
Yeah, like direct contact. And so it seems kind of scarier that it would be this like airborne thing. So that kind of had me worried, but then they also added this new element where the fungus can like communicate with its like underground network to
is that not from
call up. Yeah, that's not in the game.
Okay.
And so that does add a level of like scariness to it that that helps definitely.
Yeah, like almost feels like a replacement or not a replacement, but like a something to provide to make up for a lack of terror or a certain difficulty for the characters. I can see the spore thing. And it's something I was thinking about, not because I'm aware of the games, but it just made sense with mushrooms that you could get infected by breathing them in. So I was kind of waiting for the show to drop the rules a bit about it. And I think even the character of Ellie says at one point, she references like rumors about the creatures, and she says, oh, there's some that explode into a cloud of spores. And so then I was like, oh, I bet you can get infected. But if that's true, shouldn't they be worried right now?
Yeah.
But also, like, Pedro Pascal is not putting on another mask for a role. I think that's the only reason. They're like, we're not putting Pedro Pascal in a mask.
Yeah, even though, like, I think he has himself proved that your show can be successful even if he's wearing a mask.
Yeah, I just don't think he wants to do it.
he's tired of it. His face is like much wider than the rest of his body because of Mandalore.
What does that mean? Are you saying the mask
like stretched he's not getting, his face? It's like, you know, he's getting tan on the rest of his body.
Oh, I see. Okay. I misunderstood completely. So you're saying it's like how my penis is incredibly pale because I always have a sock around it and I'm always nude. It's similar to that.
Yeah.
But that's definitely a big thing of the spores, I would imagine, especially if it plays a role in the game. It feels like it would play a big role. So that seems pretty big, but I can just ignore it since I never knew the spore existence, so that's good. That'll work for me. I will say last week I was a little hard on the episode of the pilot, just saying it was well done, but I just wasn't seeing what this adds to the genre in any way that's exciting me. Second episode, I'm definitely a lot more into it at this point. I think I'm settling into the world, and it's just solid. The first episode was solid as well, as far as like being well done on every level. And so is this one. But I think those cold opens have really been my favorite part and make me excited for the rest of the episode. This cold open was especially chilling.
Yeah, it was really cool. And again, that's another thing that wasn't another cold open that wasn't part of the game originally.
Yeah, it feels like they're probably going to be doing one of those every episode, and I can't imagine they're going to get anything from the game for those, because it's all like setup stuff that I imagine you don't see in the game, like history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought a really good episode. I like how quickly it's moving and making choices with the characters. Especially tragic ones, which sounds to me from everything like I've heard of The Last of Us, the game, you know, that's kind of the draw, is that it's a really harsh story.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely the kind of show that HBO likes to have, is a show where many characters die.
Yeah.
It's really
They love it. Song. It works.
Yeah.
I think they should do more of characters getting turned into plants. And then the character just has to like be there. That's worse than dying. Like, just to know like, oh, my friend is now this like bush here and I have to just leave him.
And someone someday might pee on that bush.
Oh yeah. Someone. Piss pig.
Right now.
Good thing I'm a piss pig bush. So that's of The Last of We Watch Along. of Last of Us. Any other final thoughts? Are you good?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, you know, we had to take some shine away from the crisp pick, but why don't you take it away with the crisp pick?
Okay. Okay. So, I watched a movie in theaters this weekend, and it wasn't the movie that I was supposed to watch. it wasn't Skin of a Rink, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it ruined the episode, but keep bringing it up.
The Gerard Butler action movie Plane.
Nice.
Yeah.
Plain donuts. Plain yogurt. You name it. Yeah, I'm jealous, honestly. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So this movie is an action movie about Gerard Butler is a pilot, commercial airline pilot, flying a very light, lightly filled plane. And one of the people that gets put on the plane last minute is Mike Coulter, who's the guy that played Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm.
And he is like a captured prisoner who committed a murder 15 years ago and has been on the run since.
He's the Riddick.
So, yeah, essentially he's like the Riddick character of this movie. And they crash land in the southern Philippines on a random island that is filled with basically gangs that control
bad hombres. The island,
essentially. Yeah, so it's not like a normal civilized world. They're like, oh, the Philippine military doesn't even bother to go there anymore, you know. And they basically have to figure out how to save everyone of the passengers and get out alive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically like one of those ultimate dad movies.
Yeah.
That is what this movie is, you know.
Take it straight to TBS and just play it there all day. Gerard Butler rules at those.
Yeah, and this is one, this is like everything you want it to be. The thing that's great is the level of violence ratchets up so high by the end of the movie that it doesn't just feel like a bullshit action movie with no good action.
Mm-hmm.
So the action scenes are really pretty intense, and some of them are even simulated single take,
cool
one-on-one fights and stuff like that with a lot of jiu-jitsu and stuff. That's pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, so it kind of reminds me of if Captain Phillips had a baby with Rambo 4, basically.
Nice. That sounds pretty sick.
Yeah, including a Barrett, a 50 cal sniper rifle from a squad of mercenaries that come to try to save them, you know.
Yeah, we want that. But, we want bodies exploding. Yeah,
and shout out to, there was definitely a dad in the audience at the theater I was at where at the end of the movie, one of the characters said when they inevitably escape, one of the characters says, "Well, I hope this layover is better than the last."
Mm.
And this guy in the back laughed so fucking hard and
so
loud,
good
that it made the movie for me, actually. That was my favorite part. It's just a fun time, and you know, I'm sure it'll come to streaming soon. But this is a perfect streaming movie too, I think, for people. It does kind of take a while to really get into the shit because it does a lot of setup for all the characters, and
so for a while it feels a little plain.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, what are we doing here? And then it really turns it around. Comes really
nice. Yeah, I think Gerard Butler, I mean, that's a movie star. There's often talk of we have no more movie stars, and I think that's just kind of hyperbole to say that era is dying. Not so much that there's none, they're certainly not the same, but I think he is one of those we'll look back and be like, yeah, that he is and was. And what I mean by that is he shapes his movies. You know, I don't think any of those movies that he did in the past 10 years or 12 years would be the same if he wasn't in them. Because I, in fact, in some ways, I know for a fact from hearing stories of him and stuff that, like, he goes in and changes up the script with his writer and things like that to make it work. And
oh, okay.
That's a very movie star thing and takes you knowing your brand really well, you know. And even The Rock does that, but maybe to lesser effect, actually, even. But I just think that is kind of cool and also sucks, like, if you're a writer like me and then you sell your movie and then, you know, some movie star comes along and says, well, we're going to change everything, a bunch of these things, and make it kind of a different movie. But who cares? Hopefully the payday is good if the movie star is there. So there's that.
Yeah.
But it is just kind of cool to see an example, a modern example, of which we do have others, of a movie star shaping the movies that they're in. And you can see it. You can feel it. You're like, oh, that's a Gerard Butler movie. It's not just because he's in it. You know, mm-hmm. It's because he's forcing choices.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that is Plane. Such a funny title. I wish the movie ends, you know, everybody's flying away. The guy makes the joke about the layover and the music starts to swell, you know, just the triumphant, and it slowly zooms in on Gerard Butler. And then he looks at the camera and just says, Plane. And then cut to credits. That to me would be really good.
Well, it's actually, it's revealed at the end. He says, I need a new plane. And then he's like, I need one with soul. And it's actually a prequel to Soul Plane.
The pilot of the rescue plane comes out and it's Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Wait, I think we can talk. I didn't do the Snoop Dogg actually, voice for whatever reason.
When we were leaving the theater, I did hear someone in the audience also say, what if at the end a snake came out and bit him while they were on the plane?
Stupid. You love the audience who sees.
Yeah, it's in a great audience.
Yeah, that sounds like a very good audience. We'll definitely be talking about audiences a little bit later. But I want to talk about a show I just watched on Netflix. I haven't seen much of it, just two episodes, but Junji Ito presents Japanese Tales of the Macabre. This is the legendary mangaka Junji Ito, who's done, you know, a prolific manga artist and writer who does horror and some really beloved stories, which is a weird word to use for horror stories of his type. But yeah, I have a ton of his hardback books, of his collections, and some of his longer stories. I'm a pretty big fan of his. Cool. So I was like, oh yeah, this show, nice. And I think I've heard he's got some other like his story Uzumaki is getting another rendition or something.
Okay.
But I'm not sure, because maybe this is what I thought that was gonna be. I can't tell. But this is an anthology series that's all episodes around his short stories. Some of them are 24 minutes. Others are like 13 minute ones, stuff like that. I've only seen the first two episodes. And I will say, I think there's something that to me translates better for his horror on the page than it seems to in this anime form.
Uh-huh.
But I also think maybe he's trying to do something a little different with this. Or maybe not. Could be wrong, and because it's just a misinterpretation of his previous work. But even like the music choice for the credits seems, I don't know, almost poppy and like techno-y, like upbeat. Rather, maybe not poppy, but upbeat. It's cool, but it just doesn't feel like the dread that his previous works have made me feel, you know. And maybe that's kind of what's cool about reading the comic stuff, is like you can infer a lot of your own stuff over it, of the tone and speed and things. So I'm not quite I haven't quite connected with the stories yet. And maybe I even want to try to watch the sub and see how that connects, because maybe the dub is kind of throwing me out. It's a little like the voice acting work is a little too bright for me. I think it could be a little more understated and subdued for some of these stories. Okay. But I definitely recommend, if you like horror, give it a chance, especially if you maybe like horror and don't necessarily watch anime. Because I think it's the horror aspect of it is so strong that I think you wouldn't really care. And it doesn't have those, like, necessarily the anime tropes of usual, you know, the reason why some people might not watch animes. But yeah, that's Junji Ito Presents. What is it? Japanese Tales of the Macabre. Chris, cool. What else you been watching?
Yeah, so I also watched something on Netflix called Junji
Ito.
So not the same thing, but a very similar name. And that's an action movie. A Korean action movie about this futuristic world where, like, the last parts of civilization have, like, left Earth. And they're fighting in, like, a civil war. And they fight. They have, like, robots that are fighting each other. But so here's the thing is, this movie was directed by the guy that did Train to Busan. Sang-ho Yoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he did the first, second Train to Busan. This is, like, one of his next movies. I think this movie is, like, I don't know if it was just made for Netflix or something, but it seems way less of a scope. So it's like, it sounds like it's a very interesting premise, but yeah. What this movie is about is basically just a science facility where this woman is trying to basically clone her mom, who is like this huge, like, war hero for the country that died years ago, but they found a way to, like, preserve her mind, and so they're making these robots to bring her back, hopefully, in, like, a better capacity. And so they're just, the whole movie is basically just them, like, having her do this same great action scene where she's, like, training to try to beat it. And it's not like, you know, what you would imagine of, like, oh, there's, like, a civil war. Okay, so there's going to be a bunch of, like, war scenes.
Yeah, will we see
different
that?
Places. It's like, no, there's nothing like that. It's just this one, like, self-contained action sequence where she fights these, like, really cool robot, like, dog things. And then, like, the drama of the daughter now being, like, an older woman trying to frustratingly try to get her mom back to, like, 100% in the sentience of her to work properly, while she has this, like, asshole rich dude trying to fund the experiment but getting, like, you know, tired of waiting around for it to be perfect.
Yeah, classic.
So yeah, and I'd say the end does have, like, very cool action scenes that aren't just that same sequence over and over, but I feel like it wasn't enough for me to really think this is, like, worth most people's time. And it is only, like, an hour and a half, though, which is nice. But yeah, so it really looks great, but the story, just, you know, halfway through I'm like, I don't really care about the struggle, I just want to see the cool action.
Well, yeah, and it sounds like it kind of promises a bigger thing than it is.
Yeah, from the outlook of it, if you see the trailer, you're like, this isn't what I thought it was gonna be. But yeah, so it was an interesting movie, but I mean, definitely not nearly as good as Train to Busan. And even Train to Busan 2 had way more characters that were, like, interesting. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, like, The Shape of Water, in a way.
I'd never seen it, but from what I understand, okay. It's like fairly small scope.
Yeah, right? It's just kind of like the alien creatures like stuck in a facility.
Yeah.
And there's not too many other characters in the movie.
Because you can kind of do that. You could say, giant monsters are in constant battle on the Earth's surface. A daughter trains her mother to become, and then it's like, oh, well, you never have a scene showing the giant monsters who battle on the surface, though. It's like, yeah, but that exists. You're like, no, but that's why I hit play.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting is, like, they have a room filled with, like, 100 of robots of the mother, right?
Okay.
They're all, like, off. And then every time they, like, test one out, they, like, destroy it and move on to another one. So it seemed weird because you're like, oh, she gets through the testing, except for, like, at the very end, she kind of screws up. And then you're thinking, like, well, just use 100 of her at once.
Yeah, yeah.
If one of her is that good, what about if you just made 100 of her?
Yeah, you already have them. Stop destroying them. Yeah. And just use them.
And then, you know, you're kind of like, well, maybe it's her AI is just so complex or something that they can only do one at a time or something like that.
Yeah, but like the processing.
There's like
power.
A fight scene where she's fighting just like generic robots that are like haven't been printed yet, so there are no faces on them or anything. But they're like sentient AI that are good at fighting to where they put up like a pretty good fight against her. So you're like, how much different are these than her then? If
yeah, she's use them as fodder.
Them, then they're clearly you can make a ton of these guys and
yeah. Even if they're just like waves to get killed while she does the real damage, it's like let's use them.
Yeah, but yeah, all the designs are really cool. It's cool. It's a good get for Netflix too.
Yeah, I was excited to see that on there. Maybe I'll put it on at some point. It still sounds like it might be a little bit interesting, as long as you're not taking in the whole Civil War thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, where's Captain America? Solid. Where's Iron Man? That's my Civil War.
True. Which side are they on? What side is her mom going to pick?
I'm with Cap.
She's Cap
gonna
be a pro-registration.
Well, good. Let's see. I just want to. Jung, and it's JUNGE, right?
Yeah. Underscore E.
Underscore E.
Yeah.
Jung underscore E. Watch, you're going to listen to the interviews from the director, and he pronounces it as that. When I started making Jung underscore E, just quickly mention. One other thing before I get to my feature review. I've been rewatching Station 11, second watch. I kind of got inspired last week after The Last of Us to check it out and watch it again. And really awesome watching it for a second time, knowing what's actually happening and is going on. It definitely is a more enriching read of it all. There's just so much stuff that obviously was like right there and not even like super important, but just reasons why things are the way they are and why things are happening that at the time watching it, you're just so caught up in what the hell is this amazing thing, that now I'm getting to kind of enjoy that, the kind of discovery of those moments and seeing the story play out in what feels almost like a different way. I'm really enjoying watching it again. It's super, super great. What's weird is, I don't even know if I mentioned this last week or to you, or I think it might have been to someone else, that Hulu has ads now for certain shows.
So you mean HBO?
HBO. I mention that last week?
I don't think you did.
Maybe just to you somewhere,
I know you just DM'd me about it.
Yeah.
You talked about it.
So it's really weird. Watching Station 11, there's ads, and there's always on HBO the ad at the start that you could skip. But this, it actually cuts away 3 to 4 times throughout the episode with ads for HBO.
Other shows on HBO?
Yeah, but you can't skip them. And it's so... like, dude, what are you trying to say about this show? That it's like lower tier, so you have to have ads in it or something, or you're going to like cancel it, you know, because they've been canceling so many shows and deplatforming so many shows of their original content. It's like, what is the game here?
Yeah, that's really bizarre. That's the first time I've ever heard of that being a model that they use.
Yeah, I haven't heard a peep about that leading up to it, and I still haven't. Like, nobody on the internet that I've seen has talked about it, no podcasts. But to me, it feels like kind of a weird and big deal.
Yeah.
It's like the testing the waters for putting ads, ad support on it, you know? Like, hey, let's start with our shows. They won't mind if it's our shows because it won't feel too scummy. You know, it actually, because to me, at least, it feels less scummy if it's their own content. You're like, okay, I get it. Yeah. You want me to watch stuff. And instead of like, hey, you're making money off of this Bleach ad while I'm paying you money to watch this. So fuck off.
Yeah.
But Station 11, good despite the ads, and I think the Blu-ray is coming out soon, the Blu-ray collection for it, so that's good. All right, Chris, what else have you been watching?
Let's see. I did watch a 1992 classic Encino Man.
Oh, Brendan Fraser, Sean Astin,
and Pauly Shore.
Yeah, that's right. How could I forget? Pinocchio himself, Pauly Shore.
Yeah. This is my... So I was watching... The reason I ended up watching is because a cousin of mine never saw it. And we thought, oh, we should all watch it together. And it was like $5 on Vudu. So was not really a deal at all. But yeah. I don't know. This movie, I really liked it as a kid just because it's so stupid. And watching it now, I feel like it's aged pretty well.
Oh, really? That's good, because I watched it a ton when I was a kid, but not since.
I don't really think there's too much about this that's like... Yeah, that's like too far or something. Because, I mean, this was a kid's movie, too. This wasn't like, you know, Biodome or something like that.
Right, it's not a stoner comedy or something.
Where you watch it now and you're like, oh, that's just sexual assault. Like, that's all that is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Straight up, that's just sexual assault. But yeah, so this movie, no, it's much more innocent. And the performances are just really classic, you know, I feel like, of just... Brendan Fraser at like the height of his career, essentially, before he did like the Mummy movies and stopped doing stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like the movie aged as well as Brendan Fraser's character in the movie.
Yeah, it's a little joke. That movie was encased in frozen under a pool.
It's ice.
In Encino. I found it.
The VHS copy.
I really love the villain in this movie. He's just like this douchebag asshole.
Well, I don't remember the villain at all. I don't even remember what actor it was. I have to look that up.
Yeah, his name is Michael DeLuise.
Let's see. Oh, yeah, this guy was definitely a great classic asshole. And a great current asshole, too. Yeah, I remember him now. Yeah, he's really good.
Oh my God. Yeah, just a classic movie, you know, about a caveman getting frozen in ice and being brought to our present day. And instead of meeting anyone normal, he meets Pauly Shore, which would probably be like the worst thing for a caveman to experience.
Eddie.
But it's Pauly Shore in this movie is just great.
He's going 110%, right? Of just full Pauly.
And, you know, part of why my cousin wanted to watch this is because of all the buzz with Ke Huy Quan and how he was in this movie he's like has a pretty small part in this movie, but he was in it, and he like crowns Brendan Fraser at the homecoming or whatever.
Oh wow.
Or prom. So they had like a round table of actors recently, and both of them were there being like, hey, we're here, we're back again together.
That's fun.
So yeah, it's cool. It's cool to see that. But yeah, classic kids movie.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that it ages well enough, you know, because it has been so long, and it's a movie that was dear in my heart. You know, we'd rent it constantly and watch it over and over, and then just never did a revisit, like so many of those movies. Even Drop Dead Fred, I gotta do a rewatch of that. Phoebe Cates, I mean, I'll watch any Phoebe Cates movie any day of the week.
Yeah.
And some of the days from The Strong. What is happening? All right. Any other thoughts about it?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, we'll put that one on ice. Hopefully not for as long as Brendan Fraser's character in that movie. I want to talk about a movie that I saw in theaters. I've been meaning to see it for a while. I had actually had two plans fall through to see it, and was starting to get terrified that I'd never see it in theaters because I knew I had to. So then I forced myself out randomly to go check out Skinamarink. So Skinamarink is a new horror movie that's out in theaters, surprisingly, in my opinion. But I'm not unhappy about that. So it's a shot to look like a 70s horror film with film grain, kind of that tinny sound, or, you know, like the audio just feels different in that era of movies, everything. And the trailer didn't really give away much. It just kind of like, it almost was an advertisement for seeing the movie, not really for the movie. Like, just kind of like giving you this feeling like, whatever the fuck that is, I got to check it out.
Yeah.
And I guess it's about two four-year-olds wake up to find their parents missing and all the windows and doors gone from their house. So it's a horror movie, obviously.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, that's happened to you a bunch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I've woken up to be 4 years old multiple times, actually.
Well, I think, actually what you texted me is that, you said, Joe, help, I woke up inside of a 4-year-old's body.
Oh.
And I'm not sure what you meant by that. But just for the legal record, that's clippable. Anyways, Skinamarink. Yeah. So this movie, I was like, I don't know what to expect, but I have to see this in theaters. And this movie is weird. It is absolutely bizarre. So it's incredibly dark. So dark, and it has a film grain over it. And it's a digital film grain. It's not, you know, from shooting on film. And it's really intense. And the sound is really intense. There's no music, really. There's just kind of that white noise-ish buzz for the most part. And some, like, TV background sounds. And it usually lingers on every shot for around, you know, at least a minute or more.
Okay.
It just sits on shots, and they're often shots of just like the upper corner of a room and shit like that. And as far as the actors, you don't see a single actor head on or even a full shot of them. In fact, you could probably count on two hands how many shots of the actors are in the movie. And it is an hour and 40 minutes of that.
Holy shit.
And of no, the story you get, like that, what I just said is the log line a few minutes ago. It's like, it is that, but it's so confusing even getting to that point. It's confusing afterwards. You're not sure what happened at the end, really. Yeah. And as I was watching it, you know, I knew it was going to be weird for sure. So I was kind of ready, but I still wasn't as ready where I actually couldn't believe I was in a room with like 12 other people and we were all watching what we were watching. Because a movie doesn't even like start quick and then slow down or something. It's like, no, from the get-go, it's just like, oh, here's a 4-minute shot of the same shot of like the armrest of a couch. And you're just sitting there with 12 strangers being like, what the fuck is going on? I'm just waiting for walkouts, basically. Yeah. But, okay, so that is what the movie is. And I don't think most people would want to see it. Even when I messaged you about it, I was like, hey, if you're going to see Skinamarink, see it in theaters. And then you were like, yeah, I'll go this weekend. And I said, don't. That's kind of my opinion on Skinamarink is like, you have to watch it in theaters if you're going to watch it. And even, I won't say anybody necessarily should, but you have to. That's it. But also, like, know what you're getting into. Like, you don't necessarily need to. So it's a really strange movie. I'm super surprised it's done as well in theaters as it did, let alone got released in theaters. Is amazing to me that it did. And then to see that it's done as well in its first week that they extended the amount of theaters in its second week. And I hear people talking about going to see it. Because it's like Avatar in the way that, like, people are like, oh, I have to go to the theater to see this, so I'm going to go see this movie. You know, like, people are like, okay, I've heard enough of bullshit about the Skinamarink. If I'll go out, you know. This is one of the four
See. You know, I tried to get my friends to see it, and then we saw Plane, so.
And Plane is, like, literally the opposite. Polar opposite of Skinamarink. So I have disparaged the movie in many ways already, but I will say it's a really amazing movie. It's really good, but definitely, you know, it's such a weird taste. Trying to think of a good food comparison for it, where it's like a food where you're like, man, that's kind of like, that's nasty and unpleasant, but I don't mind eating that every once in a while. Because it's so unique. It's something like that, where it perfectly feels like being 4 years old and not knowing what's going on. You know, like when you're super young, like early memories of waking up in the middle of the night, and you're just, everything's dark, you don't know what to do, maybe you hear your parents talking but you can't really hear what they're saying, minutes feel like hours, you know, the movie is that. And the high film grain is super effective because the movie's so dark that you start to see things. Because it's just like this shadowy black abyss with all this constantly moving film grain that, of course, your mind starts to try to make sense of the objects you're seeing. So you're like, oh, is that something coming closer or is that something crawling over there? And it never is. You're just trying to make sense of it. So there's so much cool stuff like that going on. That I really appreciate the movie, and it left me like feeling and thinking. So in that way, that is what we should aspire for with movies, not just being entertained or feeling joy for 2 hours, but do we feel and think afterwards? So I actually really, it's more recommend than not recommend, but I also like can't imagine too many people that I know that I would say, hey, you need to go see this. So that's Skinamarink. go check it out. It and one final thing I say is I think it's amazing to see a movie like this just be in theaters, and I think we're seeing Hollywood figure out what the new paradigm is for theater goers and like what to make available. I think also people are getting more comfortable, but I think they're also seeing like, okay, it can't all be superhero movies. It can't all be these other things. What other movies do we bring into the fold that bring people in? And they're like, oh, these weird horror movies actually do it. So let's do more weird horror movies like Terrifier 2 and this.
Uh-huh.
Like, I hope it is a sign of that happening and kind of a new era of the theatrical experience where it's open to other movies. Like I said, it's funny to compare it to Avatar 2, but I think it just is in that, what are the other movies that get people to go to the theater and say, yeah, that's the one I'll go to the theater for? The answer isn't just superhero movies. The answer has to be other things we haven't thought of. And now it's like we're seeing it with Skinamarink and Terrifier 2 and others. And the indie darling Avatar 2. But that's Skinamarink. So go see it, Chris, actually.
You said don't, but you say do. Okay.
Yeah, now I'm going to say do.
Okay.
Just to get back at you for kicking my dog, really. What else have you been watching?
Basically one other thing before we get to the main movie, which is I watched The Price We Pay, which is a horror movie starring Stephen Dorff and Emile Hirsch.
Okay. Yeah,
I had briefly shown you the trailer for it, but basically it's just the two of them with one other guy go to rob a pawn shop, and they take this girl hostage with them. And while they're escaping, their car breaks down, and they are in like the middle of nowhere. And they walk to the nearest house that's like just, you know, some random land with a farmhouse. And they try to hang out there for a while, thinking maybe they'll just steal the car of the people that live there or something. But little did they know, the people that live there are like psycho killers. Yeah, so it's, you know, bad guys running into even worse bad guys.
It's a freaking vampire movie. Tarantino's in it. Robert Rodriguez. Dust Till Dawn.
Oh, from Dust Till Dawn?
Yeah. It's basically Dust Till Dawn.
Yeah, so it's like from Dusk Till Dawn, but just not nearly as cool, as you would say. There's not as much style or action, right. That's for sure. But yeah, it's very indie. I feel like I would only recommend this movie if you're like really into horror, or it's on a streaming service, because I think it's like $12 to like buy it on digital, and that's the only place it's available
right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of the movie is Emile Hirsch is like this like unhinged killer that isn't there to do any robbing. He's just there to as an excuse so he can murder people.
Okay.
So he's pretty extreme. He gets to have fun with his character. Yeah, where he's like this kind of psycho that's obsessed with like, you know, gambling his life and others and stuff like that.
A regular old Anton Chigurh.
Yeah, exactly. Like a very low budget Anton Chigurh.
My name is Anthony Chigurh. That should be a character. Anthony Chigurh.
Yeah.
Maybe a Family Guy character or something.
Story, right? yeah, so not really too much to say about this one. It wasn't really that great, unfortunately.
Yeah, the premise looked really interesting. I think I was scouring iTunes this week or last and had seen it. And I think if I dug Emil Hirsch more, I'd probably be into it. But I'm sure he does great. Just, you know, there's certain people. Like, if it starred Anya Taylor-Joy and Vin Diesel, I'd watch it right away. Vin Diesel rules. Anyways, should we get into our feature review?
Yeah.
All right, everybody. This is our feature review. We are going to be reviewing Kids versus Aliens. And let me get that up for us. Directed by Jason Eisner. This is about an all-time rager of a teen house party turns to terror when aliens attack, forcing two warring siblings to band together to survive the night. Actually, heavily based off of Jason Eisner's VHS 99, I think, entry. That's a short film compilation. That's not what it's called. It's called, what do you call those movies? That have many shorts as part of them. Oh, God. I was doing okay. And then I hit this bump. Who cares?
An anthology?
Anthology series. Yeah. You had it the whole time. You're just watching me struggle. based off actually his story in that anthology series that he's expanded to a feature. Little factoid for you guys. Nobody said we didn't know our factoids here. So, Chris, what did you think of Kids versus Aliens?
I thought I was really impressed with how good everything looked in this movie. How much the little kids swear. I think those are my two biggest takeaways.
Yeah, they definitely swear heavy.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, no, it's like a fun, like R-rated action horror movie about little kids, and it has wrestling, which is always a plus.
Yeah,
they're big fans of wrestling, and also the villain is great in this movie too. Just this huge dickhead of a guy.
Oh yeah, such a good dickhead.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I mean, overall, I think this movie was definitely very fun. Very fun horror movie. How about you?
I absolutely loved this movie. This is up there with a Psycho Gore Man. You know, I don't think it's as good as a Psycho Gore Man, but it's up there. It is in the film night double feature. I think it's awesome. It really, to me, has everything, you know, as far as that feeling of being a kid and the type of things you do. But it's also kind of like ratchets everything up to feel really fantastical, even in that regard. Yeah. But in a fun way, versus like even like Psycho Goreman felt like being a kid, the reality of it when it tapped into those moments, like the ball game they play, death ball or whatever. But this felt like kind of a heightened for fun version of that. The kids swearing, obviously fun. It's so fast and brisk. And I think you still get all the like story and emotion you need from it. But this movie moves fast to where you're like, holy shit, this has happened. We're at this point now. You're just getting right there. Okay, let's go. And because of that, you get so much out of what actually isn't that big of a story, but the fact that you get, I mean, this is partial spoilers, but you get in the alien ship, you get out of it, you get a party, you get an end fight, you know, it's like there's so much ground it covers in what is like 75 minutes. So. Yeah. I just had a blast with it, and even from, like, I think it was pretty quick, like 5 minutes in, I was like, whoa, this is nailing it. You know, it doesn't look like shit, but it looks like the right amount of shit and weird and low budget, you know, and and just the vibe of it with the kids. You know, they're not necessarily acting realistic, but not unrealistic either.
Yeah.
And some you know, good characters that are, you know, fairly thin, but perfect for what they need to be in this 75-minute thing we're watching. A lot of good setups and payoffs. I just thought it was great. I would watch it again tonight. One, because it's so quick, that wouldn't even be... I could watch it twice. Uh-huh. But it is just so fun. So this, for me, is a big win and kind of a sleeper win. It was on my radar because I had read an article about it in Fangoria magazine and was like, okay, this sounds exciting. But... exceeded expectations.
Oh, yeah. The like costume design and the practical effects for the gore and stuff were all really good too.
Yeah, let's get into spoilers. Official spoilers. I say go check it out. Go rent it. It's worth it, especially if you can get some friends, you know, even better. But yeah, the gore, really good. The melting effects were really cool. Yeah. And it's this whole, like, other thing. And even down to just the costumes are really well done.
Yeah. Yeah, the like, cool body armor that they wear and stuff for their, like, wrestling outfits was fun. And then the fact that they get, like, a Thundercat sword was cool.
I know that they allude to being some sort of, like, known magical relic or something.
Yeah.
For no reason. The way the movie ends is just amazing.
It's insane. It's like, yeah, there is gonna be a sequel to this movie, and we're filming it right now. Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, it's really nuts.
Yeah, I hope they do make a sequel just because of how good it ended up being and how I'm sure much better they could do a sequel, right? Because the director of this did like Turbo Kid, right? Didn't he do?
Or no? I think he was a producer on that, but he did Hobo with the Shotgun. Hobo with the
Shotgun, right. That's what it was. Okay. Yeah, this guy, he's got it down.
Yeah, and I like trust whatever he would do to expand this, you know, like I don't know where it would go, but... That him setting up the sword, setting up them all getting like gassed and taken away by the government, but the aliens, like, it's all just okay. I'm in if that's how you're gonna play it.
Yeah, definitely.
What costume was one of the kids wearing? He was like in a Dragon Ball Z costume or something. Really? He had like the blue wig. And like a white coat and a red hoodie. And I'm like, fuck, I've seen that character that he's dressed as. It feels like. It feels like it's like Trunks or something. Let me send you a picture while we're talking here.
Just I can see. Yeah. I see him in the promo images.
Yeah.
The like smallest kid.
Yeah. The weird looking one. The Dustin. Yeah,
no, that is kind of like a Trunks hair. Haircut.
Yeah, it's like Future Trunks or some shit. Yeah. Like, I saw that and I was like, what is he? I was trying to look it up. I paused the movie. I was like, what character is this? It feels like so specifically a character, but it might just be the wig along with the clothes, just making some AI art style version of DBZ character. And then that's what it pops up.
Yeah.
And then Piccolo, the other kid, the redhead kid, I assumed was Piccolo with green face.
Oh, yeah, because he had. I hope that's what it was a reference to.
I don't know. Or just like random. They're like, we don't want to make costumes. Like costumes. So just be anything.
Like, just put this on. It's interesting because this movie is like a Shudder original, right?
Yeah,
but it's not on Shudder yet, right?
Well, Skinamarink as well. So they end up doing quite a few movies like that they do the VOD or even sometimes the theatrical market and then go to their thing, which I actually think is really smart because
Netflix is doing it with Knives Out.
The Glass Onion, a story. Yeah, but even they didn't pull it out. You know, they made more money than fucking Skinamarink will. but still, they pulled it. But I think Shudder's, like, they'd probably take as much money as they could. But they're usually partnering with production companies as well. But, yeah, it is kind of a smart move, I think. Like, let's get all the money from the people who aren't Shudder people. And even the people who do subscribe to Shudder will probably pay for it. And then we'll drop it. It's like, all right, I'm cool with that. I'll do that. Especially if I can see these movies in theaters.
Yeah, for real.
Not that this one was. I wonder, it might have been at some theaters, potentially. In which case, actually, if I saw that it was playing in a theater near me, I'd consider going and getting a ticket and watching it. That's how much I enjoyed it. That, like, oh man, the experience to see this in a theater would be cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the asshole guy, like you said, I mean, such a great villain.
Yeah, just like a pure dickhead.
And with how long he lives, too, it's just like he keeps being a dick to them.
Just so, like, relentlessly an asshole. We're like, how have you not been murdered by everyone around you?
Yeah, like, how can you keep this up, dude? How can you possibly keep it up? Yeah, he was so good in that way.
Yeah.
And yeah, even like the conundrum between the two siblings, you know, like, it all just goes so fast. But I don't know if you felt like it went too fast, or did you think it was just fine?
I thought it was fine in terms of its where it went. Yeah, because like you said, it was kind of like, oh, I had no idea like how far the movie was gonna go with its settings and stuff like that. And so yeah, by the time they got to the alien ship, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't really expect them to go underwater. Doing
some crazy shit here.
Yeah. You're gonna go underwater into an alien ship, okay, and then find a sword. Okay. This is something when I work with my team, writing my day job, writing a video game. A lot of the times it's like, hey guys, logic, it doesn't really make sense. And no one gives a shit why a tank is in a dungeon if they can get in the tank that's in the dungeon and shoot shit. You know what I mean? Like, you suddenly care a lot less. You might talk about it, and there's certain that you don't want to break things too much, but it's like, no, they might just buy it, you know, like, if it's fun. And that's what this is. It's like, oh, you know, like, there's this sword. You can imagine some fucking, like, legendary knight or something tried to stop them millennia ago. So it's just like, you can infer your own, like, crazy backstory that even seems like it doesn't hold up to scrutiny. You're like, why is that skeleton, if it's that old or what, whatever it is, why is that skeleton cleanly there and it's the only one? Okay, I'll do some more gymnastics. But at the end of the day, you're like, well, I don't give a shit because it was really cool that the character found that and fucked shit up with it.
You're like, well, any excuse to have, you're like, what would be the weapon you'd want to have besides a gun? Oh, well, a sword. Okay, well, here's a fucking sword.
Yeah. And of course, also playing into her emotional arc of proving, you know, that she can wield a sword to her brother and the friends, and proving that she's a badass. Like, just even those little touches are like, oh, that's great that you were able to wrap that in. Yeah, I do think the script is really solid as far as, like, it uses everything comes back and, you know, pays off. I thought all that was great.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun stuff. Great house party scene.
Oh, yeah.
The aliens' designs were awesome, too.
And just, like, fucking the way they walk so briskly at you. It's just creepy. They don't run, but they locked knee walk at you. Yeah, I think you get a bit of everything for a little bit in this movie. You know, alien ship, like very biological looking ship. Alien fights in the house, alien fights in the ring, wrestling. It's just like a lot of shit. And you don't have to watch it for that long to get all of that either. Well, cool. Any other thoughts about Kids versus Alien?
Kids versus Aliens 2, hopefully soon.
Yeah, and I'll definitely be following this guy's career. I will say I've never watched Hobo with a Shotgun. And I will be watching it now because Jason Eisner, I do trust you at this point. Got to check it out. So, that's Kids versus Aliens. If everybody could go on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. That helps a lot. Helps us keep going. Email us with any suggestions or questions for us to talk about on air or anything. Email us. I'm not going to give him an email. Tweet at us at Joe Cabello at Rebirth Project. Chris, what's coming up?
So it looks like this week is Infinity Pool.
Oh, hell yeah.
Skarsgård and Mia Goth.
Yes, please.
That definitely we're going to watch. And then also, not Hobo with a Shotgun, but Shotgun Wedding comes out on Amazon Prime streaming.
Which one is that?
That's the Jennifer Lopez, Josh Duhamel.
Oh gosh.
Rom-com they murder people.
Oh yeah, I remember the trailer for this one.
Yeah, it would be great if that movie, I don't even know, but if it is rated R and it's just like extremely violent on top of it just trying to be like a normal rom-com.
Yeah. I think it's getting good reviews, maybe. I'm not sure. But, I think if it's one of those things where it's like, oh, man, if you go all the way, this could be cool. Hopefully you guys go all the way. All right. Well, it sounds like Infinity Pool. I'm going to be, like, making a point to see that movie for sure. I even think Brandon Cronenberg is doing some introductions at the AMCs around me. Have to find the right time. I'm trying to. We'll see. I think they probably at this point all sold out and all that, but I'm going to check. In. Yeah, maybe put on my old AMC uniform. They've changed the uniform 5 times since I've worked there, but I will wear my old red and blue one. Say I'm from corporate. Well, cool. Well, guys, thank you for another great episode. Yeah, you could thank them more eagerly than that, Chris. Or more enthusiastically. There we go. See you, suckers.